This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. You're hitting you with that da 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 of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Can't call me artist. Can't call me idol. Anima tongue tied.
The boys, it's BTS. I'll wait till you guys stop screaming. You know BTS is big. Your American record label cobbled together boy band would-be's could never. BTS recently concluded their American tour with their first U.S. stadium shows at Citi Field in Queens, where they did better than the Mets. I was there, and you know if I was there, definitely Jeff Benjamin was there. What's up, Jeff?
Hello, hello.
Jeff's back. Jeff writes about K-pop for Billboard and many other publications, the leading American authority on what's happening in K-pop. And Jeff was with us, it was maybe a year ago?
A little over a year ago.
Yeah, and we were at an interesting moment at that time. K-pop. Because I think we ended off that conversation with when will K-pop have its Despacito moment?
Yeah.
And that question has been rendered, I don't want to say irrelevant, but there are two interesting things that have happened in the subsequent year that have maybe changed the terms of the conversation. One is that the Despacito moment actually turned into an entire, much bigger than a moment.
Yeah.
Like it was a sea change in terms of both collaborations between English-speaking artists and Spanish-speaking artists. And also now you have Bad Bunny and Drake just doing full Spanish records that may be as big as Despacito ended up becoming. So that's one thing.
Right.
Number two, BTS's full-fledged arrival on the U.S. charts on their own terms.
Yes.
Not worrying about a Justin Bieber remix.
On their own terms.
That's what I'm saying. So just doing it.
Yes.
I mean, you know, no shots at Steve Aoki and Designer, who I'm sure, you know, are getting 73 cents in royalties from their work with BTS.
Of course.
But the terms have changed, right?
Yes.
So let's maybe start with that BTS tour. Let's start with Citi Field show and then kind of work backwards and talk about the year in BTS. Mm-hmm. I've been covering concerts for 7 decades.
Wow.
A long time.
I've read them all.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Even the ones on Microfiche.
Yeah.
So that show to me was certainly on par with any of the great boy band extravaganzas of the 80s and 90s.
Sure.
And early 2000s. And it's been interesting to see American record labels try to kind of like incubate boy bands and sort of like flop. So gracelessly.
It's been tougher.
Yeah, in the last year or so, when you see this model that's just like brand clean, crisp, brand new, excellent, you know, like all the everything's polished, all the corners are super square and edgy. So why do I need an American boy band? You know what I mean? Like I'm watching BTS and there's 40,000 kids screaming. And I was like, oh, I'm good. Like, I don't need any of this other stuff.
You know, you're actually picking up on a sentiment I think a lot of people, myself included, actually, had been kind of feeling about pop music for a bit. I think just in the sense that the reason I get so into K-pop, and I think it's because it is sort of this multifaceted thing. It's it's got so many different sounds, so many different elements, so many different visuals, elements of choreography, so many things that just make this sort of like 360 degrees full circle of entertainment that, I mean, our pop artists weren't doing that. And I kind of came to this idea that, oh my gosh, K-pop is giving me what I want and more. And I think it just, it's that heightened level of, and so much so, it reminds me a bit of kind of what Lady Gaga did to pop music, maybe back like, oh my gosh, like a decade ago, you know, wow.
Man, no shots.
But, you know, very similarly, like just, I felt like every pop artist had to like kind of step up their game, step up their visuals then. It was not just about putting out a song, and eventually, but like you had to have this concept, this larger idea, this larger look to things. And I feel like that's, I feel like everyone's now like they're on watch, like they're on high alert, like K-pop is coming. They're like, oh, we're gonna get left behind if we don't step it up like
it,
they do.
It really does feel that way. And also, I mean, a thing that I know we've spoken about before, but also continues to kind of be, I don't want to say a revelation, but really refreshing to me, is kind of the extreme fluidity of the pop groups. So, you know, when you think of kind of American boy band history, you know, you look at whether you're going back to New Kids or you're looking at New Edition or you're looking at NSYNC and Backstreet or even something like Mindless Behavior, you know, B2K.
Oh, wow. Mindless Behavior.
Hey, I love it. If anybody has an XL Mindless Behavior t-shirt, please, please email me.
Same.
So there were defined roles.
Yes, for sure.
And a thing that I'm always struck by, and very, very struck by at the BTS City Field show, was the kind of intensity of the fluidity between rapping and singing, between like lighthearted and serious, between high fashion and street fashion. Like, it's every member. There's not members. They have clear personalities, but but the roles vary, I find, song to song.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're not wrong in that sense, in that there is sort of this change up, you know, nothing is ever so set, at least when it comes to the stuff that they're producing. You know, there's never, you even look at that song we listened to at the top, Idol, you know, it goes from sort of harder rapping to dance breaks to the fluttery vocals, you know, it really, they try to, again, kind of be that whole package of pop entertainment. And I think rather than thinking of their music as needing to be one sound or one look or say one thing, it's kind of like the group's role itself in sort of the larger K-pop scene is sort of where they stand. You know, if you remember One Direction, we're kind of like beloved sweethearts. The Wanted were kind of marketed as their sort of bad boy, you know, rivals in that way. In the K-pop scene, everyone has their own area, their own niche, in that it's, you're not so much defined by your sound or your look or kind of your choreography or things like that, but you're defined by larger elements. BTS stands for, you know, these elements of self-love and always wanting to speak their truths. But there's other groups that are focused on acrobatics or other groups that are focused on larger themes of you know, being extraterrestrial beings. Like, there's all these elements that in K-pop, everyone has their place. It's not so much like you're the, you know, if one is white, one is black or things like that.
Right.
It's more like everyone just kind of finds their space.
One's the tough guy, one's the sweetheart.
Yeah.
Like, it's not exactly like that.
Right, exactly, yeah. 100%. And I think that's another reason that I think K-pop, it's just, it's got like a little something for everyone. These larger themes that, you know, again, lots of its listeners, I don't think actually speak fluent Korean. But they get into these songs and these artists and because I think there's something larger that connects with them in that way.
Was there anything that really jumped out at you about this tour and this show? Had you been to previous dates on this tour?
Yeah.
So was there anything, whether it was specifically to the City Field show or the tour in general, was there anything that jumped out to you, whether it was from the onstage or just seeing what was happening in the crowd?
I mean, there were two kind of really big takeaways, I think, specifically with the City Field show.
Yeah.
I thought for sure, you know, they were going to bring out Nicki Minaj, who's on the Idol remix, or bring out Steve Aoki, you know, for a song. And, you know, because I was like, wow, this is such a big flex moment. You know, they're going to bring out the guests.
It's a real coronation moment, sure.
But they did it all on their own.
Yeah.
They really didn't. They brought that show, that kind of well-made show that they brought to Seoul, to Japan, that they're bringing to Europe, that they brought all throughout America. They still brought that show that was still very much, very much them. And I thought that was kind of remarkable in the sense that, again, they kind of do it all on their own terms. You know, they didn't need to bring out any, you know, cover songs of American, you know, or sing, you know, Empire State of Mind or something. You hear that a lot in K-pop concerts.
Is that true?
Yes, like, there's a lot of covers of Empire State of Mind. Because I think it's like a...
I haven't been to any of those, but okay.
It's a nice way to hook in the audience. But I think BTS was like, you know, we are here on our own for sure. And as well on the other dates, you know, that there was, I got to see the two shows at Prudential Center, which happened a week before the stadium show. And I don't know, something that I think really, really did stand out to me is that on two different occasions, one with Jimin at the City Field show at the very end and with V during the Truth Untold at one of the Prudential Center shows, the guys actually were moved to tears on stage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, we don't really see that from a lot of our American pop artists.
You think they were real or you think they were crocodile tears?
Oh, to be honest, I think they were real.
Okay, no, it's okay.
because I think it's a different... In the culture itself, they're a lot more open to crying, you know, out in public, out on stage. And I think it's actually more of a culmination of just like putting in the hard work and seeing themselves in sort of these unbelievable situations. Because the K-pop industry, it's tough. It's really tough. But
and it is a genuinely like, I don't want to short sell it.
No.
It is a genuinely unprecedented thing.
Oh, for
what
sure.
What BTS has been able to achieve in this country in the last... say 18 months.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, something that I really, really loved was that when Jimin was on stage or when he's crying and his image was projected on the LED screens, that actually, like, I think they screamed like louder than ever when to like almost kind of like, I thought it was like, they were excited that he was crying. Like, it's kind of a weird thing to think about, but it was almost like also those cheers of encouragement and like that too. So I don't know. I thought that was really remarkable that he was kind of moved by this moment. And it seemed like V was also sort of moved by the actual song and its lyrics. Just things that I just don't think we're really seeing, especially from the male groups and male acts like that.
Okay, I wanna say one song that really jumped out at me, and then you can talk about maybe a song that jumped out at you. So I wrote about this song. It's called Singularity.
Yeah.
It's a V solo song. Yes. Let's actually listen to Singularity.
Yeah.
잠시 이토록 한 꿈속에도 너를 괴롭히는 환상통은 여전히 나는 날 잃은 걸까 아니 날 잊은 걸까 남은 듯 옷으로 달려가 oh, 그 속에 내 얼굴 있어 부탁해 아무 말도 하지 마 이 불만 그려 손을 뻗어보지 마 결국엔 언젠가 봄이 와
So this is a bop, this song.
Interesting and, word.
It's a bop. And a thing that I was very struck by is I highlighted this, and as we can talk about ARMY all day long, but certainly amidst the flood in my Twitter mention, the day of the show review, there was like a sub, there was like V Hive. There was like a sub ARMY, V ARMY.
Yeah.
That was very excited because I think they felt that this song was maybe underloved or not as successful as maybe some of the other members' solo appearances, solo songs. And so there was like a little bit of a sub-narrative of like, thank you for acknowledging the greatness of this V song.
I love that. You know, what's really kind of, I think, always been really cool about BTS is that they've put out songs by the individual members, but lots of times it's still credited to BTS.
Right, because they're on the album. They're on the main record.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not like, you know, you have to always point out, like, this person's solo. And actually on their Wings album from 2016, which is arguably sort of like their breakout moment. Mm-hmm. That's one that Blood, Sweat, and Tears was on. They all had solo songs as well. But again, it was all credited to BTS. And I think there's this sense of individual but united united. You know, there's still this front that brings them together. So when I think there is the opportunity to shout out something that feels special, like a representation of V, I think V is particularly a really cool member. Mm-hmm. I love that sort of the vibe of his voice in particular, yes, that the smoky, raspy. And also, I just love the symbolism in that performance, too. If you remember, he's sort of dancing with himself via a coat rack.
It's funny. I actually had like a weird extended conversation with the copy desk because I was trying to describe what it was.
Yeah.
So it was like a mannequin / coat rack.
Right. With one, a coat on it.
Right. Yeah. And one of his arms was in the coat and he was sort of like caressing himself with the on his other arm.
Right.
But via the coat. Yeah. It was a very, I don't know if I did a good job describing it in my review, but I definitely struggled with that.
It's tough. Well, I mean, and that's the thing is that, like, you know, where does that even, when do we see that in pop music, you know? And I remember watching the music video and thinking, like, you know, there's similar images in that too. And I didn't even realize what was happening at first.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it felt like there was a lot of symbolism and a lot of, you know, the sense of being alone and solo and not being able to, you know, love, you know, yourself, all the elements that kind of represent this album and BTS's sort of line of work and this most recent trilogy of albums kind of, I thought, were really nicely put in together with like V's perspective.
What's a song that jumped out at you or a performance moment that jumped out at you?
I really, really did love The Truth Untold, which is the one. It's actually, so it's featuring Steve Aoki, but it does not sound like a Steve Aoki song. And I remember being like, wow, this is sort of like a stadium rock anthem in that way. And it's not done, again, credited to BTS, but it's actually done by the four vocalists of the group. That's Jimin, Jungkook, V, and Shin, and Jin. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, just I never had like a moment with that song in the past, but then kind of watching it right there, I kind of like, I don't know what it was. Maybe I was feeling the moment or feeling with the army and, you know, seeing the, you remember the light sticks, right?
At the
concert. On. The amazing.
What do they cost? I wrote about it. They cost like $57 or something?
Yeah, army bombs or these bombs, light sticks controlled by
you get a free one, Jeff? What's up, man?
You know what? They've never given me one.
$57.
Yes, it's true.
And just as a sidebar, no merch.
You know,
no t-shirts.
I
walked around the entire, unless they were selling them in some strange corner. I walked around on my level. The entire stadium. And I did not find one booth.
You know what?
T-shirts.
I think you're right. At City Field, I don't think there was merch, like traditional merch
traditional
in that
merch.
Way.
Was
I think
there
Prudential,
a Prudential
Center, there was. Ow. Yeah. I know. I'm so sorry. And you could get like the cheap ones outside, but don't support those.
No. Although they are, you know, I love a bootleg. But I thought it was interesting that at least for the City Field show, the only thing you could buy to support was, number one, super expensive, but also number two, designed to guarantee your participation in the show.
And I think that's something really, really smart and really savvy that K-pop has particularly figured out in that sense, is that, like, you know, there's sort of like this collective way of feeling. I remember the very first concert I actually went to in Korea was the first time I ever encountered these sort of LED controlled light bands in that way. And I did not understand at first. I was like, how is everyone on the same beat in the same color and things like that? But no, I mean, that they have this technology that I think goes beyond, you know, what we're sort of been thinking about in terms of our pop shows here. But, you know, even a song like, I think Magic Shop was also another song that really stood out for me. Magic Shop has this really nice hook of come show me, I'll show you. And it's got these sort of hard hitting like synthesizers in that way. And the light sticks kind of were changing, like flashing lights in line with the synthesizers. And it created this really nice dynamic and beautiful look in that way. So I just think it's so cool that there's these kind of like elements that make you feel more connected to the performance. You know, of course, watching the artists on stage, having them talk to you is one thing, but then you're also kind of helping control almost the pyrotechnics in that way.
Yeah, and it's, I guess the closest I've come to in an American context, Taylor, I think, does something sort of similar.
Yes, I heard that.
And maybe Ariana, kind of in earlier tours. I haven't been to, I didn't go to the last one, but I feel like there was a moment in the first Ariana big show that I went to where I thought that she was doing something that reminded me of this. So let's talk about the Love Yourself, these albums, especially as compared to Wings, which you mentioned
before.
To me, there's a real confidence on this set this recent set of music. Not that the previous one wasn't, but it felt like the ideas that were being scratched out in template form or in outline form really feel fully achieved now. And I wonder what your perspective critically is in terms of their evolution over the last 2 years musically.
Korean pop music at this place it's at is like it really wants to be the sort of larger, you know, full scope of entertainment. I think BTS always take those ideas, but kind of take them to that next level, that extremely, extremely like polished and thought out level, because like Love Yourself, it's a trilogy album, right? So it went from everything from the love songs to the heartbreak songs to the kind of fully final revelation type of songs. And even, you know, I think actually, yeah, Love Yourself Her came out, the first album in the series came out in October 2017. Yep. And in less than a year, you know, they came out with three, you know, a three-part album, essentially. And just even the ambition in that way and being able to kind of have this full-fledged concept and be able to kind of, you know, say everything they wanted to say and get the full scope of it out there is already like quite impressive, I think, in its own case. But I just love also the sense that, again, they're not playing by anyone's rules but themselves. You know, I think the elements of the songs, even if there were more westernized, you know, more elements to kind of gain maybe a casual listener, I still thought that the message never lost itself. And even the last song, you know, the final single, rather, Idol, I just thought, you know, I think it kind of had a... It was a little tougher probably to get into, probably a tougher pill to swallow for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's kind of got this sort of, you know, very almost saxo beat inspired sound. Mm-hmm. It just feels very large and stadium-esque in that way. But also like the theme itself, it's kind of like, you know, it's a revelation about themselves. You know, they say you can call me artist, you can call me idol. I'm still going to love myself. Idol is, of course, referring to kind of what Korean people in Korea refer to their pop artists as. Right. They're not really called artists like we kind of think of them. They're called idols. Mm-hmm. It's called idol music is the pop music that they create. And I just love that they're kind of like, you can call us this, you call us that. We're still going to love ourselves. And that's the whole theme of this whole album is love yourself and things like that. So they're kind of taking wherever they are, you know, we're an idol, we're an artist, whatever you want to say. We're still loving ourselves. That's the whole point of this album.
So I'd actually love to talk a little bit about Fake Love in that context. Let's listen for a sec. Let's listen to Fake Love. I'm curious, especially in this big context of the BTS message.
Right.
Can you talk about where that song fits in or how it fits in? And is it, what's it in dialogue with? Because it feels like it's in dialogue.
The previous album, Love Yourself Her, was a bit more, it had songs like DNA, which is sort of about kind of owning who you are and yourself. There's a song called Mic
That's
Drop.
That's a slap. DNA is a slap.
Yeah. Mic Drop, which I really love. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's kind of like they're almost their flexing song in that way, too.
That's a slap to me. Yeah.
But then Fake Love, you know, I think it embodies that idea, you know, that came with Love Yourself Tear, is that, you know, there's not this sense of everything is great. In a relationship, in a friendship, whatever it might be, there could be those elements that don't fully come together.
Right.
And instead of, you know, accepting it as it is or kind of moving forward, you know, their whole thing is about ownership and wanting to be upfront about things. So, you know, they're saying, I'm so sick of this fake love. I'm so sorry, but it's fake love.
But even that level of skepticism I find it moving to hear that.
Yeah.
I want to hear that tension. I want to hear, and I think sometimes BTS is so grand and so grand scaled and so kind of always on turn to 11 that I want to hear some of that emotional skepticism running through.
No, exactly. And that's something that I think I'm really glad that they released it as a single in that sense, because, you know, again, if K-pop, in my opinion, kind of gets this unfair tag of kind of being, you know, whatever, you know, if you look at the lyrics and you think it's just, you know, surfacey, right, you know, whatever, pop music in that way, something like Fake Love can kind of be like, wait a minute, you know, this isn't just like, you know, even looking at the song titles, you know, it's not like party, it's not mic drops, it's like, oh, Fake Love.
Exactly.
Right? What the heck is that about? So I think it was really nice that if fans knew that from their music in the past, that finally a larger audience could get to see that too. And it became their first Billboard Hot 100 Top 10.
Oh, is that was the one that was the first top 10?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. first so far only top 10, but I have a feeling that.
Oh, it's not going to be the only one. All right, I want to move on slightly from BTS because I feel like I want to cover some more ground, but to just quickly transition out. So at the end of the show, and you sort of alluded to this a little bit earlier, so RM, first of all, each of the members kind of gave a brief valedictory at the end of the show, a thank you moment, a soaking it in moment. Mm. And RM said some things that I was very personally very moved by.
Yes, I love this.
So I'm just reading. I don't have the whole thing in front of me, just the parts that I quoted in my review. So he's talking about being in New York, which is, quote, the place where the music that changed my life was first born. I'm very relatable. I appreciate that. And then he was talking about the theme of the group, about self-love and the theme of these recent records. And he said something that I don't think I've heard really any pop star say in such a distilled fashion. He says, it feels like I'm using you guys to love myself. Which, that's wild. Just as a sidebar, that's wild.
Right.
And then he says, please use me. Mm. Please use BTS to love yourself.
Yes.
And like, you know, if I was 14, I'd lose my mind.
I was losing my mind.
But that's what I'm saying. But I was so, I found it so... Just, you know, I feel like people say really cliched things at concerts, and that felt like a non-cliched thing.
Oh my gosh. I feel like that's a very self-aware pop star in that way, you know, like who says that, you know, in that way. And I thought it was just very eloquently put out, you know, again, remember, English is not this guy's first language even, but even to express it in that way, I thought was really quite amazing. Again, these themes of self-love and, you know, wanting to preach, you know, you can say that all you want, but then when the artist themselves takes what they're practicing and says how, what their art is doing to make them realize what they're doing, it like that was just sort of the 2.0, 5.0, whatever kind of level. And I'm glad you picked up on that.
It was very, I thought it was just incredibly, just like a very elegant way of explaining the feedback loop of affection between an artist and a fan.
Right.
And that's something that I think a lot of pop artists just take for granted.
Oh,
it almost
gosh.
Feels like unidirectional.
Right.
You know, it's not like a dialogue.
Well, and that's the thing is that I think, you know, these guys have to know that, you know, ARMY, the BTS ARMY, I mean, by far the most savvy, well-organized fan group I think I've ever seen. I mean, even I still remember in like 2013, 2014, them reaching out and just even asking if I, you know, as a writer or whatever, would wish one of their members a happy birthday, on Twitter. And, you know, I'm like nobody, you know, but they were always looking to kind of help their members shine, help this group shine. Yeah. And just, they have to know, I mean, of course BTS knows this, but, you know, not every group is BTS. And I think, you know, as we'll kind of get into a bit more, you know, maybe later in this episode, you know, K-pop is having this moment, of course, and it's larger, but BTS has accomplished what BTS has accomplished because they're BTS.
Exactly.
And, you know, that fan base is with BTS for a reason. And I think there's so much more that goes into that rather than them just being K-pop, quote unquote.
Right.
They have established themselves in so many different ways. And I'm glad that we got to like kind of break down.
Yeah, and you know, certainly the raw talent in BTS is just at a very high level.
Yes, great looking guys, great singing, yeah, great dancing, but I do think there's, of course, something quite a bit deeper. Yeah,
sure.
And I think that's what the fans pick up on.
Since we're talking about RM, we are in the week of Mono Is Here.
Mono is here.
That is the RM solo EP or album. Let's listen to Soul.
This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
I'm Judson Jones. I'm a reporter and meteorologist at the New York Times. There's a tendency in weather reporting to have these sensational headlines to drive clicks because a lot of places have to rely on clicks for revenue. At the Times, because we're subscriber funded, we don't always have to use crazy terms like bomb cyclone or monster hurricane when we're covering extreme weather. We're not chasing clicks. We can just tell you the facts of what a storm could actually do, because trust is a crucial part of good journalism. If you want to support this kind of work and subscribe to the New York Times, go to nytimes.com/subscribe. I don't have to say ginormous hail.
All right, Army, cover your ears. I don't love everything about Mono.
Okay.
Soul is one of the tracks I really, really like. I really like Soul, and I really like Forever Rain.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Which are not, to my mind, what I normally like about RM. Like, RM, these are the softer moments, or the kind of like...
Right.
And so, tell me why RM, from a, let's talk from a business perspective, or from a marketing perspective, why is RM having a solo EP coming out right now in the heat of this BTS moment?
You know what? I feel like that is almost how BTS and their larger company, Big Entertainment, has operated from the get-go. It's a lot of mystery. It's a lot of sort of unexpected drops. It's a lot of teasing and a lot of hints. But there's always like clues out there. So like, I think it was like, it could have been years ago. I don't exactly remember, but RM posted photos of himself with the caption Mono, and people were wondering if that, you know, was in reference to that. I think it's just this moment probably felt right for him creatively. I guess, you know, what's kind of funny is that a lot of K-pop fans were saying, you know, all these other artists push their releases towards the end of the year because it's been a crazy week for K-pop.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, they probably pushed their releases so they didn't have to compete with BTS. And then here comes RM with this, you know, playlist.
Like, obviously, if you look at sort of the Big Bang, G-Dragon, like,
yeah.
Do you think that the vision is to spin him out in that similar fashion?
Honestly, no, because, yeah, he is the leader and he's sort of been, you know, the representative of the group, you know, of course, speaking in English the most. But I think the reason, and only so far three members of BTS have put out mixtapes, solo releases, like full-fledged projects in that way. It's been RM who released his first mixtape in, I think it was 2015. Mm-hmm. And that was very hip-hop, very aggressive, you know, what we kind of know him to be in that way. J-Hope and Suga.
Yes, RM stands for Rap Monster, just for those who, those of us, those
recently
listeners
who changed.
Don't, maybe he's an R&B monster now. I don't know. He's still a monster.
If these songs aren't going to represent the whole group, the group as a whole, you know, he'll put them out in a way to represent himself. And I think, I feel like the tour, you know, they literally just got back to Korea today. Okay. Like they were in America, of course, for this stadium tour. They were in Europe. They just got back to Korea like today or yesterday or whenever we're recording this. But I feel like it was almost like kind of maybe if the Love Yourself era has finished and the group itself has kind of found this form of self-love. And this is where my theories and my overall K-pop, thought processes come in. But I think RM has himself moved from in the first mixtape, there was a lot of questions about needing to prove himself and kind of fighting for what he wanted to stand for as an artist. On this tape, he sounds more at peace. He sounds more like he's found himself. He's comfortable with himself. He's much more in a reflective place, and he's realizing things about himself maybe that he hadn't realized before, and all thanks to kind of his success with the group. So that's sort of my...
And then what are the challenges? Because obviously, like, with a group like BTS, where so much of the energy is about the love of the group, for and, like, the power of the group as a unit.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, everything gold must fade. You know, like, you get to a point where people do get spun out. And I'm remembering recently on Netflix... was served up YG Future Strategy Office. Have you seen this?
Oh, yes. I've heard about it. Okay. So watched
it. I'm struggling to remember. I'm embarrassed. I can't remember which of the Big Bang guys.
Seungri,
Seungri, right. So, this is what Seungri, you know, like. So, at a certain point, RM is going to, I would imagine, be put out there in a much more aggressive way.
Oh, yeah. That's sort of the goal, I think, of any group, pop group in general, is to make sure that you've kind of established all their, you know, all your members as sort of fledged stars in their own way. Because, you know, RM's done, he's sort of been the most out there in terms of, you know, did a song with Fall Out Boy, has kind of popped out there himself. But, you know, V's been doing acting gigs in Korea. There have been other moments for the members to kind of shine in their own ways. So you mentioned Seungri, for example, who's the youngest member of Big Bang, and the four other members of Big Bang are currently serving their military service. And because he's not quite at the age where he needs to go yet, I think he's kind of doing his own thing on his own. So there is this sort of additional element of the boys, at least, or the men are kind of forced to take a bit of a break and kind of stagger themselves out. Some groups all enlist basically at the same time and try to come back around the same time.
Right.
I'll be interested to see if BTS does that
too. Yeah, they're still a couple years away.
They are, for the most part.
From the age requirement.
Yeah, I feel like this playlist in particular, it's kind of looking to showcase whatever sort of unique perspectives that were only to RM. Maybe something that was maybe too personal or something that didn't work for the entire group. You know, one of my favorite tracks, like Moonchild, for example, BTS, one of my favorite songs on the previous albums was Ampaman, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Which is sort of...
And that was part of the encore at...
It was.
At City Field Trip.
Yeah. A great encore. And I love... It's sort of like this... Japanese superhero. Ampaman himself is sort of this Japanese superhero. I think he's made from food or something. It's kind of, you're a very atypical superhero in that way. But I was, you know, listening to something like Moonchild, and that sort of seemed to me like another sort of underdog superhero in that way. And you know, if the idea of Moonchild or looking at the moon or something like that does not maybe connect with the BTS group as a whole, RM can kind of explain himself in his own ways. And, you know, the whole song we were even talking about, Seoul, those are his reflections on the group city, essentially. Mm-hmm. There's not the most positive even reflections on the city either. So I think you can
feel that also in the texture of the record.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think that's probably why it spoke to me so intensely, because you feel look, I like straightforward, exuberant music, and I like music with ambiguity. Yeah. Like, in this, I feel like the stuff that jumped out to me on this, and you're calling it a playlist, I'm calling it a tape. Like,
who knows what it is?
Who knows what it is? But whatever it is, the stuff that jumped out to me is, to me, the stuff that has some of that ambiguity.
Yeah. No, there's certain songs that I'm still, like, wrapping my head around, you know, especially the last track, Forever Rain.
Oh, yeah. So I want to pivot because I want to talk about a couple other artists and then I want to talk about some big picture stuff. But just as a quick shop talk question, because I think people who are listening who are familiar with K-pop, but maybe haven't quite figured out how to become fully enthusiastic about it. So let's just have a quick shop talk thing. When you're listening to a new record, do you read English translations of lyrics as you're listening? Do you listen once for music and then try to divine the meanings? What's your sort of process for really unpacking stuff, especially as a non-native speaker?
Usually I try to, I just listen to it without any translations or anything, you know, on its own. Most of the time I'll end up getting the track and then eventually watching the music video itself. Because I think the music video adds an element to it. And lots of times, especially with K-pop, they really, you get the full sense of the concept.
100%. When Much more than an American.
Yeah. You know. Kind of music videos, if we kind of think of them as like a sort of a side dish, you know, K-pop videos are supposed to be part of the main entree. Yeah. And that's actually how they release the music, is that they release the single, the music video, the album all at once.
Yeah.
And you kind of get, you know, this whole inundation of different content to get into. But yeah, it's usually, I'll try to pick up on kind of what I think the group represents or what the group is trying to say, you know, from my own reflections and my own feelings in that way. And then of course, you know, It's pop music, you know, everyone can kind of feel something. Pop music is supposed to make you feel a kind of way. And then, you know, I look into the lyrics and I look into different, I mean, I always look at fan theories and try to see what larger themes am I, you know, are they trying to pick up on or thinking about?
Are you on subreddits? Like, what are you doing?
There's a lot of resources. I mean, YouTube comments are amazing.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But yeah, there are so many just amazing resources specifically for K-pop fans where they can, you know, I mean, within hours, you will get not only the Korean lyrics, but the English lyrics.
Color-coded.
I was just going to say.
Oh, my God, the color-coded
websites. By members.
Oh. Who's, oh, my God.
Which I actually think is very awesome and helpful. And you know, right away, you'll get, fans will kind of see who has the most lines. There's line distribution videos. There is a lot of content that whether or not you speak Korean or you're in Korea, of course, you can process this and download it in any way you want. But there's just so many resources at your tips that in a way that I never really saw and made, I think has only helped the genre thrive in so many different ways.
Oh, absolutely. Because so many of those resources to me seem explicitly designed by or for fans who need entry points.
Yes,
or
exactly.
Or some kind of finessed way into the thing.
Exactly. So yeah, you can go on Reddit, you can go on Amino apps, go on Tumblr. Like it's, you can read Twitter threads. I mean, they're there everywhere because I think the fans really do want to get deeper into it. And again, you know, I just always, we think, you know, K-pop, pop music, whatever, but there's so much more that I think goes into this, not only from an artistic standard, but I think that the fans want to hear and see themselves too.
Shouts to everybody who does color-coded English translation websites. I salute all of you. If I was 14, that's probably what I would be doing. All right, I want to pivot to another boy band that I like a lot.
Ooh.
It's NCT 127.
Yeah.
Let's listen to Regular, not the English version.
Oh, good call.
Not the English version, on the OG.
Team, 우린 깨있어. It's a fiction, 우리가 keys in the street. All specs. 도심 속에 잠시 눈을 붙여 잠에 들지. 고민에 손에 잡혀지. 머릿속 상상이 없어지. And now we in the zone. 가득 채워 우린 걸. 단 그대만큼 늘려가. We'll be right back.
was Regular, and that is from the new NCT 127 album, which is called Regular Irregular. This album is a banger.
Yeah.
Woo! Oh.
Yeah? You it?
Oh, this is one of my favorite records of the year, maybe.
Hey!
Oh, this is
a big record. Hear that, NCT citizens?
This is a big record to me. So my first exposure, I'm pretty sure, to NCT was at KCON a couple years ago. Yeah. I don't remember.
Last year.
Was it last year?
We talked about, yeah, remember? Because you said
I thought it was 16, but maybe it was 17, yeah.
No, I don't even know if they were existed in 2016, but not in summer at least. But I think one of the biggest points from our last talk actually was that, you know, NCT 127 was kind of, you know, the new, fresh, hot group. And then the veteran group, who was arguably more famous and more successful, but didn't get the same reaction as NCT 127. And so much so that you could almost argue that NCT was like the headliners.
It's how it felt. I remember that's how it felt.
Yeah. And so now here they are.
And this record, so this is technically their first full-length album.
First full-length. Yeah, they've had a couple EPs, still considered, you know, full-fledged albums, full promotions. But this was their first full-length album. And I think a larger concept, a larger statement for them as artists, for sure.
What's your thoughts on this record?
You know, I mean, I'm really impressed with it as well because I love... Because, you know, again, K-pop and pop music, I think just in general, you need to have a reason to be there, you know. And NCT 127, their name actually refers to the longitude coordinates of Seoul. Mm. So their whole thing is that, yeah, we're representing Seoul. We want to represent Seoul. And, you know, if Seoul's biggest cultural import is K-pop and Korean music, they do a really good job, I think, at representing quintessential K-pop on the regular side. On that regular side, you know, you have songs like the title track, songs like Come Back 1:27 a.m. There's a really cool track. You know, it's very quintessential K-pop. There's a ballad on there. There's every K-pop album kind of has these elements that you're more or less expecting, and you can always kind of, you can be like, oh, they always got that ballad on a K-pop album. For the most part, you're always going to have that ballad. But the irregular side of things, because there's this transition
interlude. Right, it's like a split midway through the record. Yeah,
and it's very nice. They're kind of reflecting on their dreams and careers. And then it gets in sort of like this dissonant, like smoothie of sounds, and it gets like really kind of all over the place. And then that's where I actually think the most interesting and experimental songs come from. Like My Van is like really, really cool in that way.
Yeah, let's listen to My Van. This never stops. Where you're pushing out, we'll be cruising now, don't even care. Food all around, chips all around, we need for spare. Better to chill where you're human, now we start from there. Coating your good deal and the tenum bit that he got gum shing moose. Who is it? Who is it? The deeper you get into this album, you know, it all ends actually with the English version of Regular, which is actually quite irregular when you think about K-pop releases, because most of the time, K-pop releases do not usually go the English route. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of happening a bit, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. We were seeing a couple English releases, but most of the time they were very different than kind of what the artists themselves sounded like or what they represented. And I wanted to talk about this a little later, but actually maybe let's jump into it now about the kind of expectations as K-pop becomes a bigger force in America and I assume in other English-speaking countries.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if, from your sense, and just so everybody knows, like, Jeff's interviewed everybody, Jeff talks to everybody. I want to know if, from your conversations with people, there is a greater sense of an opportunity that is now available to connect with English-speaking audiences. And therefore, if you carry that out, there's more implicit pressure or urgency to do records that either have some English in them or are fully in English.
Yeah, I actually like how you put that, because I think right now Because in the past, you know, it was around 2011, 2012 that we were kind of getting the first sort of, actually, if you can go all the way back to 2009 and if you listen to the other, you know, here's a plug for another episode, but we went through the history, but, you know, Wonder Girls were the first K-pop group to land on the Billboard Hot 100 singles chart, and that's our main singles chart here in America. And it was an English version of their Korean song, Nobody, and it had all the elements that, you know, made them so beloved in Korea. When they came out with their next English single, it kind of stripped away everything that they sort of stood for. It was like a new sound, a new look for them. Things weren't connecting the same way they were. Girls' Generation put out a more sort of hip-hop-oriented English single, and that felt a little off from their original image.
It didn't go. Wasn't with the image.
Yeah. So what I...
And wasn't that successful, if I remember correctly.
No, not if you're kind of comparing to maybe what other big pop artists are doing.
Sure.
But and you could even say, you know, I feel like their other songs ended up doing better as a result. You know, or their other Korean songs were doing better, are just more beloved in that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the same time, I think there was this idea, okay, so no English, you know, let's stick away from the English. It's not our thing. You know, we'll stick to what we do best.
Sure.
And that was something that actually I was so lucky to be able to do the very first U.S. media interview with Big Hit Entertainment CEO, Hitman Bang. And, you know, something that really struck me, this was last year in 2017, and something that really struck me in our interview was that he said, we have no intention of releasing music in English. Mm-hmm. We want to do what we do best as K-pop artists and Korean artists, and that's sing in Korean, and that's what we do. And he said, we're just releasing a ton of music in English, it feels like Asian artists debuting in America.
Interesting.
We want to do what we do best and kind of bring that, you know, in our own way.
Right, and get absorbed on those terms.
Yeah. And I think I love that they've done that. But now it almost feels like, okay, if the cracks in the wall were happening, you know, if people, Big Bang, Girls Generation, Wonder Girls were kind of making the cracks in the walls. BTS, you know, blew it forward, and kind of like there's this sort of larger, more open space for more people to be not only more accepting of K-pop and Korean music, but maybe also there's more space to play around with the language and ideas like that.
And just we didn't really touch on this when we were talking about BTS earlier, but BTS, first K-pop act to have a number one Billboard album.
Yeah.
A number of Billboard records.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I'm sure you probably haven't tatted on your inner arm. I don't know. There's just a gang of BTS.
I mean, records that you can't even really compare even to K-pop artists. You know, they had when they released that album, it was the third largest pop album opening of the year, mm-hmm. only behind Justin Timberlake, who just played the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
A huge exposure. And Shawn Mendes. You know, like, you can't even really put them on that cape, like, they did all these things for K-pop artists, of course, but they're also right up there with the
Absolutely.
Pop acts too. It's so amazing.
And something, just to circle back to something you were talking about as far as releasing this body of work sort of in a trilogy format.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I feel like the pace at which they release music and the way in which they do it reminds me a lot of hip hop. Because I feel like that outmoded, like the album cycle of like a pop star, that feels like a very 2000s thing.
Oh my gosh,
but the idea of just like, we make music, we want to release it to our fans. Like there's an urgency.
Yeah.
And like, we are not content to sit with these seven songs for 2 years.
No, like, you're so right.
And I feel like that energy feels like a hip hop mixtape universe energy to me.
Yeah. And you know, and I think at first that was sort of a repercussion of this industry that moved really fast. For the longest time, it was kind of like at a 5-year expiration date in K-pop.
So let's just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. And, you know, most K-pop albums don't even have a second single. They'll usually actually kind of repackage the whole album and put out a new single.
Yeah, it was always extremely confusing when I was trying to buy them on like Amazon 6 years ago. Where I was like, do I have this already? I don't even know if I have this.
Oh, man. I think you're picking up on a lot of K-pop fans' frustration. but yeah, you know, there is sort of like, there's a sense of urgency that, yeah, like things aren't going to be going on like this forever. We need to put out, you know, keep the content going because, you know, especially when, you know, it's very rare to only release one album a year in K-pop, you know, especially if you're a new group or especially if you're a hot group, you know, you can kind of, you got to keep it moving, you got to keep it going. And so, I've never thought about the hip hop reference, but I wonder if they feel that similar sense of urgency or if it is more of a creative like output in that way. Like, you know, these beats aren't going to be hot forever, whatever it
might
be.
Yeah, it does
feel
like, and especially, you know, in a scene where there's a constant push for sonic innovation and forward movement.
Interesting.
You know, like, it does feel like it's changing at that rapid pace. And when I think about mixtapes or, you know, SoundCloud rappers or whatever, I just think of the pace of, oh, are you done with this? Okay, it doesn't matter because I have this new thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just going to, we're going to keep sort of like feeding and feeding and feeding.
No, exactly. And K-pop, especially, I think in just this age of, especially with young people where there's so much to distract us and there's so much to, you know, find for our attention that if you release something, it just does a really good job at kind of like getting hold of you. You know, not only are you going to get the whole album, the single, the music video at once, but literally within 24 hours, you're going to get the first live performance of it. You're going to get a special, you know, performer's going to get an interview. You're going to get, you know, maybe a special practice video. All these elements just kind of keep going in the sense that they're just pushing it out there to kind of make the largest impact possible and hopefully have longevity. But, you know, before you know it, they're on to the next thing.
A sort of tributary of talking about K-pop performers singing or rapping in English and the urgency of that, the kind of side story to that are collaborations. Yeah. So let's listen to Kiss and Make Up, which is Blackpink and Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
So Pedro just told us that this is a banger in the Rosado household, yes. And it's a banger in my household.
Yes.
And so a lot of collaborations feel forced, and I don't mean that in K-pop. Yeah. I just mean that like in life.
Yes.
This one I find pretty effective, though. So let's talk about Blackpink and why, at this moment, this collaboration happened. So Blackpink is a YG Entertainment girl group.
Yes.
Been around for about a year and change.
More like 2 years.
2 years,
but,
okay.
But yeah, they haven't put out a ton of music yet, but they've really been able to make an impact. Just sort of, they only officially have 9 songs to their name or something.
Is
like
that true? I was looking on Spotify. It did not look like a lot, but I thought maybe there might have been something that wasn't on there.
No, but yeah.
That's all it is.
But they've been able to make some really major impact just like from the get-go. I feel like they're kind of the second level of what 21, kind of the very first, they were the very first K-pop girl group, also from YG Entertainment, to hold us arena show in America.
Those were shouts to CL.
Yes, shout to CL, of course. But they've been able to, make some impact. They are the highest charting Korean girl group ever on the Billboard charts. They got a top 40 album just this year with their Square Up EP, their single
I was referencing at the top of the show.
If you didn't catch it earlier, I believe hit number 55 on the charts. Mm-hmm. They've really been able to, with very minimal sort of, they finally came here for Fashion Week this year, but it's not like they are.
They haven't done a tour yet.
No,
right?
They weren't touring. They weren't hitting the talk shows or anything like that. You know, I think there is a lot of interest and excitement about them, but they've been quite quiet in terms of just what they are doing internationally, despite the interest.
Is that true in Korea as well, or are they more public facing in Korea?
Oh, in Korea, they're out there. They're a bit. I think they're a bit more of a private group. They're a bit quieter. I think their fans would, of course, like to see them more on TV shows and things like that. But you know, I was actually just in Korea and I saw their faces. You know, they're the spokesmodels for a couple different brands.
Okay.
So I saw their faces posted outside stores. I hear their music everywhere. Mm. Yeah, they're definitely sort of a ubiquitous act in that way.
what I find really appealing about Blackpink is the music is very full throated. Like it's real. I keep thinking of like that Maxell, old Maxell ad where the guy is like being blown back by the music.
I love that.
It's like a very dense, thick.
Yeah.
Like all like orchestra at 11 sound.
Right. And sometimes I'm almost like, oh my gosh, it's too much, but it never is, you know,
but it's so, you know what I mean? Like it's real intense.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder how it would play over the course of a full, because I feel like I haven't totally gotten the subtleties of this group yet.
Oh.
And I wonder in a concert setting.
Interesting.
Like, you know, would it just be like boom, 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 boom?
You know what? That is so cool that you're thinking about that, because they did release one single. It's called Stay. And okay. It was more of an acoustic guitar jam. I believe the member Rosé, she plays guitar in it. They definitely, I believe, have the potential to show those different sides of them. I think they just need more music, you know? I want to see so much more from them. And I think there is a lot for them to show, not only as musicians, but I think there's just a lot of different attitudes and sides of them too, especially with like a member like Rosé. She posted like some cover on Instagram the other day of some song she was singing, and it sounded like a little lullaby. It was just like so nice. I can't remember the song right now, but it was some English song.
So them duetting with Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
That's okay. So why Dua Lipa? Why that sound? And why this moment?
So I heard about this record a little bit ago, and I actually heard that Dua Lipa had the song. She had written the song, you know, in the past, but she was looking for a feature and it didn't really work out. But she actually somehow connected with them either in Japan or Korea or something. Mm-hmm. And it was actually her idea to put them on the record. And I 100% agree with what you were saying about forced collaborations, or because lots of times, especially in K-pop, there have been some really, you know, I hesitate to say the word, but cringy, you know, collaborations. Just because someone is popular in their own lane does not mean that their sound is going to work with your sound.
Exactly.
But I've loved what we've been able to see in the collaboration space. You know, you look at someone like Designer and Steve Aoki and with BTS, who I thought that was a really good, you know, helmet, especially Designer's flow.
Yeah.
Like actually, that was like a perfect fit for BTS and kind of where I think they represent themselves in hip hop, for sure. But Dua Lipa, you know, she is kind of a sassy, you know, very fun, very much focused on girl power and empowerment, and kind of not standing for anything, you know, any type of man or anything like that. And I think she represents that to a lot of people here in the West. And I think Blackpink can certainly represent that to a lot of people in the East and in the West too, for that matter. So when they came together, I was like, oh, I get, like, this is good. This is going to be good.
Yeah.
And then when I heard that actually Blackpink was singing in Korean in addition to English, because they actually have 3 out of the 4 members speak fluent English, I even thought that that was even cooler because, again, you know, not changing anything about their style or what they're doing, but instead being able to still express themselves confidently, their confidence, they're empowering in that way, but still doing it in their own way. And it still sounds great.
And also, if they had shown up on that record singing in English, there's really nothing to distinguish them from any number of dance pop vocalists.
Right.
So what's the value add? Really?
That is a great point.
The actual value add is them showing up in Korean and delivering.
That is, and that is fascinating too, you know, because I think we're going to hear some English records from groups like, you know, Blackpink and BTS. BTS actually just announced their first full English record. Mm-hmm. It's coming out soon. But, you know, for now, while you're still establishing those identities, while K-pop is still this burgeoning scene, I think it was really a smart, even just business move to be able to sing
for sure.
In Korean.
And also this sort of circles back to where we started this conversation, picking up from the Despacito moment conversation from last time, which is to say, what's happened with K-pop in the last 12 months has almost like sidestepped that conversation, because we have groups like BTS appearing on like topping the Billboard album charts, Blackpink and BTS on the singles charts without worrying about an English collaborator, an English speaking collaborator.
I know.
So like why, you know.
It's so true. It's so true. And, you know, of course, you know, K-pop at its core, it's always had really good elements of accessibility. You know, all the song titles are in English, mm-hmm. or they have an English transliteration, so that if you're searching on YouTube, you can mm-hmm. find it, whether you type in English or Korean, whatever mm-hmm. it might be. But again, you know, they've always made sure not only just having those English lyrics or English titles, but, you know, making sure it's available on all platforms. It's on YouTube, it's on Spotify, it's on whatever it might be. Just, and the fans themselves, of course, you know, like we were saying with lyrics and things like that, there's just so much that makes it so accessible in that way. But of course, you know, they're still doing it their own way. You know, it might be in Korean, but there's still a lot of points of accessibility.
When we were texting leading up to this, mm-hmm. you were talking about a record that Super Junior did recently, yes. speaking about collaborations yeah. and really bringing this conversation full circle.
It really is.
So the song is called One More Time.
Yes.
And it's with?
It's with Ryke, who is like kind of a popular, very popular, like yeah. Mexican, I hesitate to call them a boy band, but they've been big for a while. Yeah. They're like three members. They play instruments. They're yes. not like the Jonas Brothers, if that's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
But they're like, they're on a hot streak right now. They just released something with Maluma, which was a huge yeah. hit. And mm-hmm. Maluma's like, you know, huge Latin pop star.
Let's listen quickly to One More Time, which is Super Junior and Ryke.
This is actually Super Junior's second Latin collaboration. Their first was with Leslie Grace, who's kind of a rising Latin pop star.
Right. She kind of came out of the bachata scene, but yeah. then became kind of more of a full service Latin pop star.
Yeah. Oh, I love that you know her too. And Playing Skills produced that record, who have done
some.
Oh,
I didn't know Playing Skills produced yeah. that record. Oh, that's wild.
No. So
they produced the Leslie Grace record.
Yes. Okay. And that was sort of, that was the very first time a K-pop act appeared on the Latin charts, the Billboard Latin charts, mm-hmm. which was just such a cool moment too. You know, not only because K-pop, it's been bilingual. There is Korean, mm-hmm. you know, every now and then, you know, of course, it's sprinkled in with English lyrics. Maybe every now and then you would hear something in another language. But this was the first like full-fledged like trilingual K-pop single.
Sure.
You know, we had a lot of.
So English, Spanish and Korean.
English, Spanish and Korean. Yeah. yeah. And so, you know, of course, Leslie did most of the Spanish, but the guys brought out their Spanish as well a little
sure.
bit, too. And. It made a lot of sense, I think, because Latin America and South America, they're very passionate about K-pop, actually. That's actually what my piece was on.
Right, in the magazine.
Yeah, about how BTS's show in Chile, in Santiago, Chile, like broke all these amazing records. And it kind of, we talked about this sort of larger, amazing culture of K-pop in Chile, of all places.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're really passionate about music there and really passionate about K-pop in particular. And some acts who haven't even really broken that big in Korea will tour or be on television in like Brazil or countries in South or Latin America. It's really amazing. So I think that was such a smart move by that company to say, okay, we have this audience here. Super Junior eventually toured Latin America and South America and brought Leslie Grace and Playing Skills mm-hmm. on tour. They did the song out there. It was so... Yeah, it was just like this really kind of full-fledged moment of kind of realizing where the resources are and realizing also, too, that America isn't just the only market.
Yeah,
that's the thing,
like, because really the lesson that I feel like I've taken away from the story you just told and these collaborations between Spanish-speaking artists and K-pop artists is that, frankly, the hell with American pop stars. You know what I mean? Like, who cares?
All right.
Like, there are natural alliances. Like, people often think of it as, like, how can we interface with American centric right. American pop?
Right.
And the truth is, you don't need to. certainly we're coming from like a Western music narrative where, you know, I write about American pop music as sort of the center of my job. So there, and then they're like, you know, you look at Billboard and it's like primarily like focused on American pop, but like
we're the music industry in the world, you know,
but it does remind you that there are all these natural alliances that in no way require any person in this country to give one single, you know, anything and magic happens.
No,
and that's all. It's just, it's always a good reminder.
It is. And, you know, I feel like a greater sense of passion about it is because, you know, it comes down to representation. You know, for the longest time, I think there was this, you know, what was a Korean pop act supposed to go off of if they wanted to break America, again, the largest U.S. industry, because there was no playbook. There was, we don't have a full-fledged Asian pop star. We don't have a, you know, Middle Eastern star either, but that's a whole other thing.
Yes.
But you know, there was, of course they're going to change themselves and cater themselves to try to fit what has worked because there was no one to even give guidance or show, you know, what there was to be. Now, the fact that we're able to see these groups not needing to change who they are, but rather,
doubling down on it.
Yes, exactly. I've always said, you know, no one ever made it by being like someone else, you know? I mean, we see so many clones. You know, it's been the 20th anniversary of Britney Spears' Baby One More Time this week. Mm-hmm. And I saw this great quote. I don't remember where it came from, but if there could have been 20 more Britney Spearses, there would have been. But there's a reason that Britney Spears was Britney Spears, and that's that. You know, like, everyone has only been able to be who they are and be able to represent who they are. And that's what I think, that's why I always emphasize with K-pop acts. I was like, no, don't change. Like, guys, like, the guys don't need to stop wearing makeup or change their hair. It's like, no, if anything, just emphasize those things that make you unique. And that's something that I'm really happy that we're seeing is happening now. That now there actually is the space to experiment and change, and maybe we will hear English songs, or maybe we'll see different images from them. But at the same time, they did it by being themselves. BTS did it by being BTS.
Yeah, and look, BTS, they're now signed in America. They're in the Sony system. I think they're on Columbia.
Columbia.
So, you know, obviously, I'm sure there will be untold efforts to make them even bigger than they already are.
But they are quite big.
On their own terms. This last bit of conversation reminds me of, I think it was Slate recently did kind of like a Great American Songbook, updated Great American Songbook package. Oh. And Isabella Herrera, who's been on the podcast, wrote about kind of like the American Songbook, but basically if Spanish speakers, and sort of like, what would that songbook look like if those voices could help determine what was in the songbook instead of sort of like basically a white English speaking perspective on it.
And
I think certainly with the way that the internet can amplify things and move them transnationally, I want to hear K-pop as it's made. I don't want to hear K-pop as it's reimagined, you know?
Right.
That's for me personally, and now there's more opportunity than ever now for that to happen.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's just got to be about keeping that, you know, for some reason, and I still don't even, I mean, I'm not at all saying it's like a bad thing, but there is this dedication to quality that will surpass anything. Like, I've heard so many things like, you know, oh, they could make so much money from this, you know, if they did this record, or, you know, this could be a great opportunity for them, or you could make so much money if you did this project. But there is still the emphasis that, no, it's not the right time, or no, it's not the right look for us, or there's this dedication to quality and only wanting to make sure that is like the best of the best of the best. So, you know, even the less popular, you know, groups that we haven't talked about that aren't, you know, maybe only get like a million views on YouTube, but their music videos, they're still pristinely created. Mm-hmm. The albums are still going to like look beautiful. The songs are still going to have those elements that we hear in other K-pop albums. There is still this dedication to quality and craft that kind of pervades the whole system that is going to go above, you know, any type of, I feel like, commercial gain. And that's something that I think also BTS is changing the game with, is that they're not, they're like rewriting the rules in that sense too. You know, I think where, I've had conversations and done my best, you know, of course, as a reporter to try to get the nitty gritty and find out, you know, what the numbers are for different record deals and whatnot. Right. But I think a lot of times those numbers are very hesitant to be released I think there is the sense that, no, we want to retain this ownership of what we're doing and things like that, rather than needing to find the biggest buyer.
Sure.
Which is quite respectable.
That said, if Columbia can get Migos on a record with BTS, I would like to hear that record. So the last thing I wanted to talk about was sort of a slightly more abstract question and concern that I have, and I want to engage with you because you, I feel like, are much more on the front lines of the K-pop discourse than I am. So I am a critic. I write criticism.
Yes.
And so I have written about some K-pop over the years, and mostly I tend to write about stuff I like just because it seems like a real weird waste to be like, hey, here's a thing you've never heard of, and I hate it.
I feel the same way.
But, you know, in the course of writing reviews, you sort of say, hey, track three is better than track six, or I didn't enjoy this person's rapping or this person's singing.
Right.
And certainly in the framework of BTS ARMY culture or certain stan ARMYs, I get the sense that there is not a robust, whether it's tradition of or acceptance of or appreciation of, criticism as part of the ecosystem. And I wonder if that's something that you have encountered, the idea of sort of like thoughtful, constructive criticism,
right?
Whether it's in the Korean press or in the American, or how it's received in the American press covering Korean music. And I wonder if I'm out here alone and sort of being like, hey, the RM solo record, like, only half does it for me. And now, like, my Twitter mentions are going to be, like, just trashed for 5 days.
Be kind, ARMY. I think that, well, there's actually a really interesting cultural conversation to actually be had here, because the media in South Korea, it's actually quite different than ours.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about it.
It's, you know, in the sense that you hear, like, lots of times on K-pop websites or K-pop news sites, I feel like every other day I'm hearing about an agency taking legal action against negative comments or malicious comments.
By a press outlet or just by, like, a fan? By like a person on a social
media
fans, site?
It's by fans, yes. But
they're taking legal action against fans.
Against
kids.
I would say you're probably not a fan if you're making malicious comments.
Right, but against individuals.
Yes, and there's this sense that if you put something negative out there, that legal action can actually be taken. And I think kind of what I'm sort of, at least kind of when I take a step back and I'm kind of looking at it a bit more, there is, from what I'm kind of picking up on, this larger sense that if something negative or something malicious is different than negative or is different than critical, or even, you know, but I think these lines get a bit blurred. And I think when we sort of hear reports about, you know, this agency is taking, you know, legal action against, you know, malicious comments against this, or, you know, we're looking into these negative comments, that kind of almost gives a sense that, okay, if it's legally okay with these artists in their hometown or in their home country, I think, you know, I think there's a self-identification in that, oh, it should be illegal to be able to, you know, say negative things, you know, and I think it's a bit of a cultural unfortunate situation, because I think lots of times when you are critical of an album, and I know I've been critical of certain albums, and of course, you know, brought out, of course, no one, I'm the same way. No one likes just ragging on an album.
There's no point in ragging.
Exactly. And I would say most of the time when you're actually pointing out sort of the critical points of an album or things that you think are not as strong, you're actually doing that because you took the time to,
of course,
take a larger understanding to the album and the artist.
It's an act of love. Like, that's what I find that sometimes to be a challenging thing to communicate to people who aren't sort of familiar with the practice of criticism.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's an act of love. Like, it's, I fully engage with it. I've thought about it. I've put my best fitting thinking cap on, and I try to share my feelings about it.
Right. And I do get the sense that I think it's going to be something that especially, you know, fans of Korean music are going to have to gain larger and larger acceptance of, because, you know, it's been so interesting in particular to watch the US media run of BTS in particular. You know, I see the fans, you know, I hear the fans, they're annoyed by BTS going on a red carpet and being asked at every red carpet, oh, you know, who's, you know, who's celebrity crush? You know, right, who, right, what right. American artist you guys want to collaborate with? NCT just made their NCT 127 mm-hmm. was at the American Music Awards. Yep. Again, all they asked is, you know, where are your guys' dates? You know, who do you guys want to collaborate with as an American artist? Mm-hmm. You know, there's things that I think there's, it needs, they want, the K-pop fans themselves want to get deeper. That's something that I've always tried to emphasize in my writing as well. Yeah. But at the same time, with that, you got to take both sides of the coin. You know, there's got to be, you know, while there's going to be thoughtful, in-depth analysis of the music that you like, there also, you know, needs to be that thoughtful, in-depth analysis of what is maybe not as well liked. And that's something that I think is going to be really interesting to watch as someone who's been watching this mm-hmm. K-pop scene for a while, because I think the more we see engaging with the music and things like that, you know, I think there's a way to do it respectfully, of course. I've been seeing some, I think just K-pop fans are really protective of their artists.
Yeah, well, that's something that I've definitely seen.
yeah.
Is there a homegrown critical tradition? Like, do major Korean newspapers do traditional like music criticism the way that the Times or the Post, the LA Times?
I mean, not what I'm really seeing, not at least from like the large, you know, again, I don't live in Korea or anything right. like that, but I don't see it in that same, it's a lot of, I think it's a, like, it's kind of crazy because like they have this one outlet, I believe its name in English is Dispatch.
Okay.
And they're like almost the TMZ of Korea in the sense that they're always the one to reveal like who's dating or who, you know, the big scandals, but they also do like photo shoots with the artists or they do like exclusive interviews. Okay. And like, isn't that would that be a
sort
bit
like
odd to
us? Weekly kind of vibe?
Kinda. But like almost like they will pick out like the dirtiest of your dirty laundry, but then also like the artists themselves have to interact with them and they will give them beautiful photo shoots at the same time too. So it's almost like, could you imagine like our, you know, TMZ doing like of the artists like hopping over, you know, other than Kanye West hopping over to, you know, TMZ to do some, you know, great interviews, some great photo shoots.
But then the next day it's like, here's all the nasty stuff.
Right. But the next day they might expose them like looking terrible at the airport or something. You know, it's like, there's this, I never, even when it's basically the comments and it's the fans that are sort of almost like critics in that way. Like I always see articles presented as like so-and-so artist, you know, releases their new album or, you know, shows up at this event. And the comments are the things, there's this big comment culture, so much so that you will actually, like some businesses will change their business plans based on feedback from these online comments.
Oh, interesting.
BTS actually decided not to release a certain song that was coming out in Japan due to that Japanese producer's sort of right-wing viewpoints expressed in the past. Huh. So there was all this feedback and things expressed from Korean fans due to kind of that sort of, you know, touchy history between Japan and South Korea. And they canceled the release, even though he's like the biggest producer in Japan, arguably. He's one of the biggest producers. He works with AKB48, which is a huge sensation in Japan. But it was a touchy point between the commenters and the people online. So they pulled the release in that way.
But you were saying also that some of the big entertainment companies have tried to take legal action against.
Exactly.
Is it successful?
I feel like most of the time it comes off as a threat, almost like, hey, back off, you know, back off our artist. But I think also I have heard of successful, you know, times that a company, like an entertainment company, has sued, you know, different commenters or, you know, nine people were, you know, sued in this way or whatever it might be. So I think on one hand, there is this culture around K-pop releases in that way that lots of times the information is just presented. It's not given with any type of spin or anything like that. Or I mean, I'm sure there are, of course, websites or there are YouTubers or there are people like that do give those more in-depth analysis. But when it comes to that mainstream media, in the way that we kind of know it, I don't really see it. I think because these company, everything is relationships, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like maybe I've sort of floated around and read some things online by Korean academics or Korean American academics, kind of like doing some big picture thematic thinking about K-pop.
Yeah.
But you know, like I see criticism as like an extension of like a quasi academic thought process, and you know, in terms of American culture. But it's I just was always curious to know if that really was in play, sort of on a more homegrown level.
Yeah, the thing that I would kind of want to emphasize to fans almost is that whether you're kind of talking about the positive things or if you're giving back that constructive criticism, it's you still took time to listen to the record, you know, of course. I think a lot of times, especially I've been watching with BTS in particular and other acts in the packs, but particularly with BTS, there is sort of this sense that I've seen with a lot of writers and a lot of takes from journalists and particularly Western journalists mm-hmm. is that they're not given the same sort of luxury. Like I see a lot of times there's really unfortunate like critiques of like the way RM speaks English, even though
that's
it's
not like, don't do that.
No. Yeah. And there's sort of these underlying themes of racism and xenophobia that I don't think it's, again, we don't have that. We don't have a representative Asian pop star. So no one even knows really how to treat them, which is just right. terrible if you think about it. And it's not an excuse by any stretch of the imagination, but I think there is something larger that's happening here by why we're seeing how the media is kind of taking these Asian acts and then also kind of the response that the fans are having kind of as a result of that. You know, not that everyone wants anything to be so fluffy and just, you know, watch them answer about their, you know, favorite food, mm-hmm. but, you know, there is sort of, I think there's
that protectiveness that you mentioned yes. earlier. I think that's the thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think it just kind of, it needs to be in the right space. You know, BTS themselves, they've opened up about, you know, their difficulties and how to define K-pop and how to define themselves. And again, going back to that idea of being an idol and idol music, there have been the right discussions that have been happening or, you know, the struggles that they face as people or, you know, I got to ask them, you know, like, are you guys happy? You know, like there are things that people are thinking about and discussing. And I think there are ways to get to those deeper kind of maybe darker topics. But I think there's a way to approach it that kind of makes everyone feel comfortable.
So what do you want to go out with, Jeff?
Well, OK, I feel like let's look to the future. Yes. Okay. We're saying that we're like, they're able to play in this new space. So yeah, BTS quite literally just this week released their first full English record with Steve Aoki. And I'm quite excited about it. I'm really curious to see kind of what the response is and what it sounds like. It sounds very accessible. And I'm very curious to see kind of where Steve Aoki and BTS can come from. This is actually Steve Aoki featuring BTS.
Okay. And what's it called?
This is called Waste It On Me, Steve Aoki featuring BTS.
You say love is messed up. You say that it don't work. You don't wanna try, no. Baby, I'm no stranger to heartbreak and the pain of always being let go. And I know there's no making this right.
That is our show. K-pop lives and thrives, and y'all better catch up. Shouts also to Caroline, who works in this building, who accosted me by the elevator. I don't know your last name, but she asked me about the RM solo album. So K-pop, it's in the air. It's in the ether. Thank you to Jeff Benjamin, as always, for coming through. Dropping gems. Appreciate you. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us. Just a quick note, I got a lot of email last week about rock. You guys care about rock a lot more than I thought, so that's a good lesson for me. Although I do want to say to all the people who are like, we should listen to indie rock. Yes, we know. We're up on that. But that's not what last week's show was about. But thank you for your service. Anyway, email us. I'm actually curious if you guys listen to K-pop, and if so, who some of your favorite idols or non-idols are. So get at us, popcast@nytimes.com. And subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your audio content, be it Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeart Radio apps, and such. Our producer in the room today, it's Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. Shouts to Pedro and his K-pop loving family in the house. We aim to please all the children. That's what we're here for. Popcast is for the youth. We'll be back next week.
We had a nimes. Don't you think we got another season that come after spring? I want to be a summer. I want to be your wife. Treat me like a come. I'll take you to one of fries. Yeah, come just eat me and throw me away. If I'm not your choice, bye, wise, waste.
And the world has no making this right.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.